Welcome to episode 437. Are you a woman above the age of 40 and your hormones are starting to feel a bit messy? I'm talking about perimenopause and menopause. If you're in that stage of life, then this might be a conversation worth listening to because I chat with a hormone and thyroid nutritionist about how yo-yo dieting has led to so many women under-eating. We also talk about why women should not be afraid of carbohydrates and how actually plenty of carbohydrates will actually help you. We discuss the evolutionary purpose of menopause because there's only four species of animal that actually do menopause, and also how menopause might be a symptom of women that have been unconsciously suppressing their sexuality, their femininity, and their capacity to birth so much more than just babies. What a list of topics. Today's conversation is with the author of the Amazon bestseller, The 30-Day Hormone Solution. And honestly, this conversation is just brilliant. And a quick side note is that if you keep your ears open and your eyes peeled, you might just spot the cat that visited us too. All right, let's get into it.
Welcome to the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. You've tuned in because you want to start taking your health seriously so you don't, well, get sick and die. Here we talk all things health, nutrition, and human optimization. Let's jump into it with your host and resident scientist, Maddie Lansdowne.
What's up, my healthy friends? We're talking menopause, macros, and metabolism today, which is pretty relevant to the mission that we've got going on this year, which is to coach 500 people to achieve real weight loss. And by real, I mean more than just being focused on losing body fat. And we actually do that without calorie counting, embarrassing weigh-ins, or a forbidden food list. So if that resonates with you in any way, then click the link in the caption or the show notes down below and let's chat. Okay, I want you to meet a Canadian friend of mine whom has appeared already on episode 143 and 373 of the show, and she's back for another drink at the Well of Eternity, which is Samantha Gladish. Sam is a hormone nutritionist with a specialty in metabolic and thyroid health and is the host of Canada's top-rated health podcast, The Wellness Witch. She's the founder of holisticwellness.ca, a website dedicated to helping women optimize their hormones and their health. And if you're thinking of being a health practitioner, or maybe you already are, something else that Sam does is run a business coaching and mentorship program to help people earn a living from their health qualifications outside of having a day job, just like I do, and just like Sam does. So welcome to the show, Sam. What's going on? How are you?
Thank you so much for having me back. That was a fun intro.
The Well of Eternity.
I love it.
I don't know where that came from, but
you just pulled that one out of thin air. It was great.
Yeah, we're all over the place at the moment, but I'm okay with that. I literally just came to this interview from cutting Yali's toenails because she's at a point of pregnancy where she can't see or reach her feet.
Oh my. That's what happened.
It was romance 101.
So sweet. That is very sweet of you to do that.
Yeah, well, you know, it's the first time I've ever given someone a pedicure, or Maddie's version of a pedicure.
Yep. I love it. Oh, I bet she thoroughly appreciated that.
Yeah, she was. She was adorable.
Amazing.
But we're going to be talking about something which, to me, in the world of health and women's health, feels like one of the hottest topics at the moment with menopause and perimenopause. And there's so much that goes on in that space. But I want to actually ask you a question sort of in the opposite direction to which we want to go, which is when you see stuff on social media and online, what are the things that you see repeated in this space that really grinds your gears, that really annoys you? And you're like, this is not the right message. This is confusing people. You know, what is that information that you think people are getting that you're like, oh, I need to get on Maddie's podcast and correct this?
Well, that would take up like the entire episode because there's so many things. Oh my God. It is crazy in the online space, honestly. And I'm actually so curious to know what yours are too. I think the things that I see often, well, I mean, it's very polarizing, right? You have like carnivore community that's like, carbs are the devil. And then you have vegan community that's like, meat is the devil. And carbs is probably a really big one that I see, just like, carbs are so bad for you. Avoid carbohydrates. Meat is so bad for you. Dairy is so bad for you. These are some big things that I often see. And I do not agree with any of them. And I think there's a healthy middle ground to all of it. I am definitely very I'm a proponent of eating meat and eating dairy and just eating animal products in general. I think it's very nutritious for sure, but to each their own. I'm not here to go on someone's vegan page and call them out and be rude and all the craziness that comes with that. That actually drives me crazy. It's like, it's okay to have different opinions. You don't got to be mad about it. It's okay. Yeah. So those are some of the common things that I would see that I see for sure, especially in like even the women's health and hormone space. There's a lot of, well, there's so many influencers now. And so there's a lot of people who, let's face it, do not have a lot of credibility or experience working in the field with clients. You know, truly, really working with people one-to-one and seeing health history, seeing lab work and really diving into it all. So, you know, you see a lot of things like just drink more water and eat more protein and everything will be fine. And it's just like, well, it's a little bit more complex than that. Those things help for sure. So I sometimes see like a lot of things that are being undermined, right? Like, oh, it's so easy. Just do these, you know, simple things. Get sleep and eat more protein. You're fine. You'll be fine.
Yeah. I mean, imagine having a male nutritionist tell you all of those things as well.
Oh my God. Yes.
And welcome to my world.
So true. It's very true when you see men talking about it and you're like, you don't know, man. You don't know what it feels like.
Totally. I just think the way that I try to communicate about it is to just imagine that it's like in the same way that I'm trying to understand childbirth at the moment and all of the body changes and pregnancy is that to just understand that it's something that I don't understand, but the closest I could get to understanding it is that it's just absolute chaos. It's the worst day that I've ever had in my life times 10 on repeat. That's how I think about it. So that it's like, so when I give advice or share things, I'm like, here's this, but also I know that there's just a clusterfuck of pain and suffering there that I don't understand. So if that doesn't land with you, just come back and just let me know and we'll figure something out.
Oh, I love that. And you know what? Here's the thing. At the end of the day, you actually work with clients one-to-one and you work with women. And so you've been in, you know, you're in it and you speak to women on the daily and you coach them on the daily. And so I'm not going to put you into that category of other, you know, male nutritionists and influencers, because that just wouldn't be fair to you because you truly are like in the field doing the real work.
Oh, thank you. But to go further into that idea of like things that are out there that are agitating, to say the least, you just said male trainers. And one of the things that drives me crazy is personal trainers giving complex nutrition hormone advice and just saying you need to lift heavy and eat protein. And I've seen just so many people arguably ruin their metabolisms and their thyroid health following personal trainers, you know, and these guys and or women, you know, they're in the gym 10 hours a day. They're working there, they're lifting weights, they're, you know, doing physical work all day. And so the idea that we compare ourselves to somebody that's in a gym lifting weights 10 hours a day with clients, you know, and that's their environment, drives me wild. But the trainers to just be like, yeah, it's this easy. Like, you know, having abs 24/7 is, it's just so easy, you know, as if it's not like your clients are mothers and corporate workers that are working 16 hours a day and, you know, their plates are super overloaded. And so, the personal trainers are usually the ones that drive me crazy. And the vegans, I'd be lying if I didn't mention them.
Yeah, they get your blood boiling.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, totally. No, I could definitely relate.
But in your experience or like where you're at right now, like what should we be focusing on? What is, like, let's demystify some of the stuff that's out there at the moment so we can give people a bit of clarity, because I know it's, you know, like we always say to every client, you're a research study of one, something different works for everybody. But that also feels like the disclaimer for all practitioners ever to say, if I get it wrong, I told you that it's a, you know, it might not work for everybody, right? So I want people to leave with a little bit of information that might be useful.
Oh my God, absolutely. And let's face it, at the end of the day, there are really important foundations that we can all benefit from. So getting those foundations and those basics in place is really, really key, because one of the things that I do often see is a lot of supplements being pushed and fancy expensive testing being pushed. And I'm not against any of that, you know, running a Dutch test or running a GI map test or hair mineral analysis. Like, these are all really great and they can provide us with so much great data. But at the end of the day, if we don't have the foundations in place, which we can, of course, dive into, our nutrition and sleep and hydration and movement, you know, stress management techniques, like all of that, if we don't really have these things in place, then what does it matter to go run all this testing and spend all this money? Because once you get the reports and the data back anyways, well, then you're going to have to start implementing the basics no matter what, right? So yeah. Of course, there are foundations that we need to have in place. So we can definitely dive into those.
Yeah, well, it reminds me the way that you just talked about that of when I studied and, you know, being taught that ordering tests should only be if the result is going to change your therapeutic strategy. And so there's an interesting statistic. What it is specifically, I don't know, but the overall idea is that wealthy people get more diagnoses because they can afford more tests, right? And so as a practitioner, it's, you know, it's awesome to throw all these tests at clients and they think, wow, my practitioner understands all of this complex science and all of this data and information. And it's wonderful to look at and I geek out over it too.
Totally.
But unless that result is going to change the therapeutic strategy, it's a useless piece of information, which in most cases is going to be everything you just listed. The hydration, the food, the exercise, the movement, the stress management is a huge piece. And so, and most people need to start there. But I guess, you know, what has led to people having that basic foundation be so dysregulated?
Oh my God. Well, we can definitely blame social media for sure, because there's just so much misinformation and so much conflicting information that it's really hard to know what do we do? Where do we start? And it's crazy to think that here we are at the time of this recording in 2025 and women are still so confused on what to eat. And they're jumping from protocol to diet. And I'm thinking, how are we still here? How are we still having this conversation around carbohydrates and low fat or high fat or whatever it is? Like, how are we still asking these questions around nutrition? And we've really just lost the sense of intuition. And I think we're actually, when I hear that term intuitive eating, I don't truly connect with that, because I feel like we're so disconnected from our intuition.
Totally.
Like we don't even know what's really right for us. So I always say, like, intentional eating. And when you can think more intentional about eating to have energy, eating to have fuel, eating to support blood sugar, you know, eating, like, energy is the basic one. You want to have energy to get through your day. Food is going to give you that. It's the fuel that you need to, you know, spark the fires so that you can actually have energy throughout the day. So when you can eat with more intention, I think then that makes it a little bit easier. But I don't know about you. It's crazy for me how sometimes I get these DMs from women and they're like, is it okay if I have almond butter? I'm like, what? I don't know. You tell me, is it okay for you to have almond butter? Like, it's just these questions that I get, and I get them on the regular, that it just really shows me how far off we are from, like, trusting ourselves and, you know, and just how far off we are from really understanding what it means to eat well and take care of ourselves, that we have to ask somebody online.
I totally agree with the intuitive eating thing, because when you've got a messed up microbiome, you're underslept, you know, you're super stressed because life is crazy and things are out of control at the minute, or the kids are keeping you up, and that's going to be me soon, you know, all hours of the night. Intuitive eating feels like chocolate, wine, and pizza.
Totally. What's the quick thing? What's the easy thing to, like, numb this out?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I would argue that that is actually your intuition doing the correct thing, because it's going towards the fastest, quickest means of energy that you can get, right? That also triggers dopamine. Because I think in the intuitive eating space, there's this idea that your body has some inner wisdom that only goes towards healthy food. But if we think biologically and practically, that's the smartest choice from an energy intake perspective, right?
Yep. And especially when it comes to carbohydrates, like what are the things that we're craving the most in a time like that when there's stress going on? It's carbs. Your body wants that quick fuel. Your body needs glucose. Your brain needs glucose. And so you're absolutely right. It is the right intuitive message that you are actually getting to go have something that's going to give you a basically simple sugars and that quick fuel and that glucose, because that's what is needed at that time. And when it comes to stress, what we actually need is carbohydrates. We need that quick fuel. Now, there's choosing better options of carbohydrates, but I'm also not against having some simple sugars, which I think we've been so scared to eat. And, you know, women will ask me like, oh my God, you're eating dates. Aren't you scared of the sugar? You're having raw honey. Aren't you scared of the sugar? It's like, no, I'm not scared of the sugar. I'm scared of forest fires and AI and, you know, the government taking my control away. Like, that's what I'm scared of. I'm not scared of eating these dates that have 20 grams of sugar in them.
Totally. I resonate with that entirely. You said before as well, you know, how are we still here? And I feel the same in a sense because, you know, there's so much nutrition research. There's a millennia of data, whether it be through Chinese medicine or naturopathy or, you know, all of these different modalities and Ayurveda that have been going on for so, so long and keeping many cultures and many millions of people healthy and able and fertile and all of the things. And so, you know, I feel like maybe the argument is, and partially I'm in this world too, right? Which is we're all trying to run businesses which help people. And so it's the marketing messages that are out there conflicting because everybody's trying to sell someone a solution or a program. And especially when it comes to carbohydrates, there's this, you know, there's been this real demonization of them in the last few years. But do you think the issue is people understanding which carbohydrates are the good ones? Because surely at this point, most people know chocolate, wine, cheese, all of those things, for the most part, in large volume, is not a good thing, right?
Right. Right. You're so right. Like, I mean, at the end of the day, we both run businesses. So we are practitioners, but we're also marketers. Mm. And so I think that when you see somebody that is really pushing against something, like really like that restriction, that deprivation, when it's like you have to white knuckle your way through it, you know, when I just see when they're just, this isn't a balance. Like, how am I supposed to sustain this? That's where I start to question, like, this is just real marketing, you know, something to just like lure me in. And it really should have this balanced approach. Like, I don't think that we need to be restricting foods or seeing foods as good and bad and condemning foods. And when we start to see that, that's when I think we really need to start asking these questions. Like, is this actually, you know, the right message? Is this just really marketing? We know that there's a ton of marketing out there and it's so hard to filter through all of it on social media and like, who do we actually trust and who do we believe? You know, something that I always say to so many of the women that I coach and mentor who are now in their like 40s and perimenopausal years, and they're sharing with me these, you know, images of these 22-year-old girls who are like, here's how I get my flat stomach and, you know, drink this green juice every day. And it's like, well, maybe you shouldn't be getting advice from a 22-year-old who has no idea what it's like to go through perimenopause and isn't in their 40s and, you know, maybe hasn't had kids or anything yet. Like, we have to, that's something else that we need to start asking better questions ultimately at the end of the day is really what it comes down to.
I totally agree. And for, in regards to macros and the stuff that people are putting on their plate, like, what are people getting wrong? What are they getting wrong about their macronutrients that they're getting in sort of across the board?
Yeah. And it's not even something that I would say that they're necessarily getting wrong. I think that for so many women, they're just so busy. And we think that healthy eating, I mean, healthy eating looks different to everybody. Okay. So saying healthy eating, like, what does that actually mean? And especially when it comes to weight loss specifically, I think that a lot of women are like, oh, well, I'm eating healthy and I'm eating clean. I'm eating well. So why am I not losing weight? And then this is when it really starts to come down to, well, let's look at the macros and like how you're actually balancing out your quote unquote healthy eating, right? Like, how many calories are you actually getting in? How much protein, fat, and carbs are you actually getting in? So when it comes to really like balancing out your plate, what I always tell women is to start tracking your macros. and track them for a good 2 weeks so that you can get some data. And that's going to help you to see, number one, how many calories do you actually eat in a day? How much protein do you eat? How much fat? How much carbohydrates do you eat? And this is just a really good starting point. Instead of like going on a diet or trying to follow some specific macro breakdown, just track what you're currently doing and get that data, because we need the data. We can't really work with any, you know, we need the data in order to work with something. And so get that data. And then now you can really start to see what your habits are. You can start to see what you're under eating, what you're overeating. Are you skipping meals all day long and then saving all those calories for the end of the day? Are you fasting? You know, what does it actually look like? So it's not that we're necessarily getting it wrong. I think it's just that we don't really have data to pull from. So like, let's pull from some data and see what it looks like. Some of the things that I often see is that women are really overdoing it with their fats, like really going overboard. And it's not that fat is bad. Fats are really healthy. But when we want to have more of a balanced plate per se, it's so easy to overdo fat. And especially if you are eating animal proteins and just animal products in general, you're having yogurt, you're having cottage cheese, you're having steak, you're having chicken, like all of this has fat in it. And it also has protein. And so it's very, very easy to overdo it on the fat. And we want to just be mindful of that. So it can definitely impaired digestion a little bit. I know for many women, myself included, like if I really overdo it in the fat, or if I overeat fat in one meal, like it can kind of send me to the bathroom. And so a lot of women can, you know, find that the same thing happens for them. So just being really mindful of your fat intake, because it's really easy to just drizzle olive oil on your salad. And then what does that drizzle actually look like? That could be an extra 100 calories just from that alone. So these are some things that I would really want women to be mindful of. Protein. I often see so many women under eating protein. And just with so many clients that I will have, again, track their macros over 2 weeks. Let's get some data, submit it to me. Let me review it and see what this looks like. The fat is always high and the protein is always low. And so protein, I often see even some women that are eating, you know, 60 grams of protein in a day, which is so little. And when we think about protein, many of us think of bodybuilding and building muscle. And absolutely, that plays a role. But protein breaks down into amino acids, and those amino acids go to build your neurotransmitters. So it's our mood that is drastically impacted by eating enough protein. It is the number one thing that I hear from women is, oh my God, I increased my protein and I feel like emotionally stable. And it is because protein plays such a massive role in regulating our moods. Obviously, yes, it plays a role with muscle mass, but it's important for hair growth, skin health, nail growth, brain health. Like it is so, so important. And we are definitely under eating it.
Yeah, I totally agree. I guess maybe it was the low fat movement, you know, back in the day in the 70s, 80s, 90s, you know, after Ansel Keys demonized fat, that put people into this place where, oh, if steak has fat, then, you know, red meat is all bad, or animal protein is all bad. And so I think that is, it's really, and something else that I've talked about on this podcast too, is I think that there's a real marketing mistake for fat. So really, if we use the word protein and carbohydrate, they're the terms that scientists would use in a laboratory. Right. The other term they would use is lipids, not fat.
Yes.
Right. And so because the word fat means overweight and it means something in your food, I actually think there's some kind of psychological thing going on there where fat is bad because it makes me fat. So I'm an advocate for the idea of being like, no, we need to call them lipids.
Lipid. Yeah.
So that we get the stigmatization away from that particular word. But I'm curious, you were saying that you had like a lot of women have a lot of fat in those sort of meal plans or diets or whatever they're eating at the moment. Do you think that's sort of a result coming back the other way from the keto movement?
Oh, for sure. For sure. There are so many women in my world right now who have come from keto, carnivore world and significantly under eating carbohydrates, really overdoing it on the fat. And unfortunately, the number one thing that we see is this tanking women's thyroid. So we see a lot of low thyroid function and Hashimoto's from women in the keto space. You need carbohydrates, you need glucose in order to convert T4 to T3. So your inactive T4 converts to your active T3, and that's your active thyroid hormone. And we need glucose in order for that to happen. And so women are significantly, if you know, under eating carbs, if any, for that fact, for that matter, in the keto space. So yeah, I see this a lot.
Do you want to know how to lose weight without counting calories or needing to use restrictive diets? Turns out the answer is on Instagram. You might be interested to know that over 70% of our paying clients begin their journey with a weight loss goal. Most of them achieve this goal without fad diets and without calorie counting. And in the process, they also rewire their brains to stop craving sugar, and they stop their secret binge eating sessions without the need to use loads of willpower. Why does what we do work? Because the fat that you want to lose, it isn't just about the calories you're consuming. It's actually wild how differently we do things. We work on your mind and your body gets better. And I think more people need to know about how we can do this for you too, which is exactly why I'm back on Instagram as The Real Weight Loss Coach. If you want to know how to really drop the weight that's been holding you down, how to keep it off, and to stay healthy long into the future, then follow me on Instagram. The link to my profile is in the show notes below, or you can search for me on Instagram by typing in The Real Weight Loss Coach. Give me a follow and I'll chat to you in the comments and the DMs over there.
Well, and that introduces the great metabolism debate, right? That point about the thyroid, because some people say that you can't ruin your metabolism and other people say you can ruin your metabolism and downregulate it and upregulate it. What is your take on that whole ruined my metabolism conversation?
Yeah, well, when we think about metabolism, we often just think about weight gain, fat gain, weight loss, right? That's typically what we think about when we hear the word metabolism. And metabolism is so beyond that. It really means whole body health. So yes, fat loss, weight gain, weight loss, all of that plays a role in metabolism, but it's our brain health, it's our heart health, it's our fertility, it's our thyroid health. And our thyroid is like our metabolic igniter. It plays such a massive role in our overall metabolism. And again, just going back to that keto comment, so many women are coming from the keto world. They're under eating carbs. And keto or not, we just see a lot of women under eating carbohydrates. It's very common. And I think, again, it's just this idea that, oh, fat's going to make me fat, but also sugar is going to make me fat. And let's face it, you overeat these things and you overeat your calories that, you know, your maintenance calories, that's how you gain fat. Okay. That's how you gain weight. Mm-hmm. But I think that, again, just carbohydrates have been so demonized so that women are really under eating them. And then now we start to have this issue with our thyroid tanking. And then now we start to see our weight going up and the scale going up.
Okay. So based on this idea that there's a lot of confusion with carbs are bad, they convert to sugar in the body. And so, you know, can I have this kind of carb or this kind of carb? My question to you as somebody that works with women and as a practitioner of nutrition is, what is enough carbs? What's the amount? What's the volume? How much should we be eating? Which carbs should we be afraid of? Which ones should we not be afraid of? Like, where is the line in there?
Absolutely. And it's a hard question to answer because we're so bio-individual and our energy output is going to be different. And so it's going to look different for everybody, right? Based on somebody's activity level and just on their overall needs for their overall health, it's really going to be different. So again, it's going to come down to go track for 2 weeks and let's just actually see how much you're eating. And there's not that there's one right number, like a certain amount of grams per se. So like right now, for example, I'm actually eating quite a lot of carbs, more than I used to. I'm eating about 252 grams of carbs a day. That is very hard to get in. Very, very, very hard. Especially when I was, you know, in a calorie deficit like a year ago, and I was eating maybe 100 in 40 grams of carbs in a day. So it's really hard to, you know, almost pretty much double that and get to 52 grams. And so if you, and I'm not saying that that's what women need to eat. Let me be really, really clear on that one. I am not telling you to go out and you need to eat 252 grams right now. That is just currently the number that works for me right now based on my current goals and being in like just tracking maintenance calories. Okay. And also my activity output. But if you track, like, I'd be really curious to just, I would love to see some of your listeners. What do those numbers look like? Because I bet for the most part, most women are somewhere around that 100 grams, maybe 130-ish grams, give or take, of carbohydrates. And the thing is, just going back to myself for a second, like at 252 grams, that is really hard to hit if I'm only relying on complex carbohydrates, because it's so much volume of food that like I cannot digest all that food. I'd be eating straight like 12 hours a day. It's just really hard to do that. So it's having a blend of complex carbohydrates, which are going to come from your vegetables, fruits, veggies. I do also include things like potatoes, and I have homemade sourdough bread that I make, and rice and oats, and I eat all of that, and fruit. But I also have like fresh organic pressed, fresh orange juice, or just like a fresh juice, because it's going to be simple sugar for me to get 20 or 30 grams of carbohydrates in to help hit that 252 gram goal. And here's what I can tell you about eating 252 grams of carbs. I am so stable. There are zero cravings. I don't even think about food. I don't think about dessert. And actually, if anybody knows me, like I love my dessert because I love to bake. And I don't even think twice about it. I do not even think twice about it because I'm getting in so much deliciousness. Like I'm enjoying so many carbohydrates and it's so delicious, and I'm having the fruit and I'm having the juice and I'm having the maple syrup. And these are things that we've so condemned. And again, I'm not saying that everybody needs to go run out and eat these things, but it all comes down to tracking. Let's see where you're at. And then now we have to play what I call like macro Tetris and finding like that sweet spot for you. And based on your activity level, do you do better with a little bit more carbohydrate? Because this is, you know, fueling, for example, your strength training and your energy output. Are you someone that is craving a lot of sugar and sweets? Well, how can we bring in maybe a little bit more carb to help balance out that craving, and pairing it with enough protein? That is essential. Pairing your carbohydrate with protein, because that does help to stabilize our blood sugar.
Yeah, that was going to be my next sort of point/question is that in order to, because one of the triggers that people can find obviously is by putting carbohydrates in, that they start this craving cascade, right? That just goes and goes and goes. And the answer is often found in the protein, right? The more satiating nutrients. But I had this conversation with a group of clients the other day, which is I actually believe there's multiple diets which are good for therapeutic and sort of specific outcomes. But the goal for all of us should be to arrive at this wholesome plate, which means that there's going to be a bit of fat, there's going to be a bit of protein, and there's going to be carbohydrates as well, dare I say it, right? And so the other thing I've seen happen is people that are deep into the keto space or carnivore space is that if they come back to carbohydrates, they have this carbohydrate resistance type thing where they have, you know, one kale leaf and they need a 3-hour nap. Have you seen that?
No, actually. I mean, I think it is really important for me to mention that if you have come from the keto carnivore space and you're like, okay, I need to start eating carbs now after this, you know, after listening to this podcast, you have got to go slow, like way slower than you think, because at the end of the day, eating more than your maintenance calories is where you gain weight and where digestively, even just bringing all those carbohydrates back in, like your blood sugar, of course you're gonna feel it for sure. So I haven't heard about the kale leaf specifically, but I can see how that can happen in terms of, you know, being super low carbohydrate and then you start to bring them back in, like, yeah, you're going to feel it. And so this is why you have got to go really, really, really slow. So many women in my program, same thing. I tell them, like, if you've come from the low carb space, I want you to like increase those carbohydrates by like literally 1 to 3 grams. It might be a day. It might be every few days. It might be a week. And you just have to just monitor that and see how you feel. But you got to go a lot slower than you think. And the other thing that I really want to add here as well is that as you do this and you start to increase those carbs, you are going to have a lot more water retention. And so you will see this show up on the scale. It does not mean you gained 4 pounds of fat overnight. That does not happen. It's just that you are retaining more water and it's totally normal. That's what happens when you eat carbohydrates. Even if you just eat 200 extra calories in one day, more than you normally eat, the scale will go up. Water retention. So if you are someone who is just kind of monitoring your weight and you're weighing yourself on the scale regularly, these are things that you have to keep in mind, because I know how much the scale can kind of mess with us and it can really mess with us and derail us and cause us to restrict and deprive. And so you just really need to be conscious that like this is a normal reaction.
Yeah, that's a really good point, which leads me to ask the question, do you believe or do you support the idea that as women move through perimenopause and towards menopause, that softening or gaining weight is a normal part of that?
That's a great question. Well, I can say that is exactly what happened to me 100%. And yes, it is. It's very normal to gain some weight. Very, very normal, because we are losing estrogen and progesterone, both of which are helpful for burning fat in the body. And as you lose those hormones, or you have a lot of kind of a roller coaster with those hormones, especially in those perimenopause years, you have months where your estrogen can be really high and other times where it's really low, and it can be quite a roller coaster. And we also start to see issues with insulin happening here. Women can become a little bit more insulin resistant during this time. And so this is where you could be doing all of the right things, but the weight comes on. So it's one thing to gain a couple of pounds. It's another thing that 15 or 20 pounds has come on during perimenopause or menopause. That's where maybe we want to start dialing things in a little bit more, really looking at sleep, looking at inflammation, looking at nutrition. You know, what does your activity look like? You know, these are things that we really want to be mindful of. So trust me, it's happened to me. So I get it. And I also get that most women, which is unfortunate, they often don't move forward on taking care of themselves or their health unless it's an aesthetic thing and they see the weight coming on. And now they're like, oh yeah, I got to lose the weight. When it's like, you know, to tell someone like, oh, maybe you should just, like I always say, if I were to sell prevention for a living, no one would sign up.
Totally.
No one cares. But you talk about, you know, weight loss, then they're like, okay, I'm leaning in. I'm going to do this thing. I need help. And it's just like, if we could really shift our mindset around that and start to really think preventatively and like where we want to be in 10 years, 20 years, and 30 years, because I think about being in my 70s and how do I want to feel? It's not just about looking, but knowing that my bone density is going to be impacted and that heart disease goes up during menopause and we lose our estrogen, that cholesterol levels rise, dementia, Alzheimer's, like such a massive increase in all of this. And I want to be as healthy as possible, vital as possible. I want to be able to have my strength and muscle so that I could push things and pull things and get in my car and, you know, sit down and get up comfortably and move around. Like these are the things that I think about. And I know it's not very sexy, but it's really important that we start thinking about them and addressing them now.
It's interesting as a species that we even have menopause, because I think there's only 3 different animals outside of humans. I think it's whales or dolphins, killer whales, maybe orangutans and elephants. And then humans that have menopause at all, because for both men and women in most species, once the fertility years are over, it's like old age happens rapidly and you die. So I'm curious what your thoughts are, because we're in such a youth obsessed culture. You know, it's all about being young. And, you know, we could dive into the the nature of that from a sexual perspective and creating offspring and fertility and the fact that, you know, young girls were married off as soon as they got their period. And so like youth obsession on some level has been a thing forever, maybe through the lens of fertility. But I guess my question is, in this world where, you know, we are able to live until 80, 90, 100, which means that there's, as a species, we have a significant portion of society of women that are, you know, beyond their fertile years. And I guess in some traditional cultures, perimenopause marked the beginning of a woman's transition into sort of the wisdom years and the healer years. And, yeah, you know, she was the wisdom keeper or a group of the grandmas that would help the young women raise the kids and stuff like that. But what do you think we can do as a society, as a culture, as the woman listening, or even the male partner that's listening to this? What do you think we can do to help, I don't know, reclaim a new perspective on women's function in society and relevance and importance beyond that sexually available, fertile window of time?
Yeah. So I definitely don't see it as, you know, the term like anti-aging. I think a lot of us think about, you know, implementing all kinds of strategies for anti-aging, but I am pro-aging. And that's, you know, one of the mindset shifts that I had to make, because a couple of years ago when I started getting gray hairs, I was, oh my God. And, you know, it was like just welcoming this. And this is, you know, this is where I'm at. And this, what's happening to my body, and just really welcoming that and thinking about pro-aging. And because I can't stop it. It's happening. Every year I'm getting older. So, I got to get on board with this. And I do think that, well, we're, like you said, we're living, you know, to almost 100, and we are outliving our hormones. And so this is where the conversation of HRT comes in, and, you know, bioidentical hormone therapy. And definitely not an area, it's, you know, not an expert. I'm not saying that all women need to go on HRT, but I do think that it is a conversation that women need to be having with their primary care physicians or their naturopath or whomever it is. And really, and not just having these conversations with their physicians and whatnot, but also learning it for themselves and really gaining the knowledge for themselves, because we are outliving our hormones. And it's no surprise that women in their 50s and 60s have the highest rates of heart disease. And then they're put on cholesterol medications, because we see this whole lipid profile change with their cholesterol levels, their triglycerides, their LDL levels, which I refer to as like lousy. That's how you remember it. Your HDL is your happy cholesterol. Your LDL is your lousy. And so, you know, and we see a rise in like these cholesterol numbers and triglycerides. And then we're put on cholesterol medication. And it's just so interesting. It's like, well, we're in menopause and we're not producing estrogen. So why not estrogen therapy instead of going on these medications? And so we definitely know that HRT is so powerful against breast cancer. There was massive misconception around estrogen replacement therapy and breast cancer. And there's so much new research around it now. We know that it's protective against the brain for dementia and Alzheimer's, bone density, which is massive. We have so many women who, as they enter their menopause years, are having low bone density and osteopenia or osteoporosis. And so I just think having this conversation, like we have these tools available to us. So seeking out HRT can really be something that can support you as you age, especially now, you know, going back to what you said, like we're living a lot longer. And I think it's important that we optimize that. And it doesn't, and, you know, I was going to go into like the Botox conversation. I don't know why my brain was going to go there, but, you know, I'm not for Botox and things like that. But I think anything that can support our health longevity is really important. Yeah. So yeah. Does that answer the question?
No, that was a great answer. I think it's a conversation worth having. And there are a few celebrities, and their names don't come to mind at the moment, that are trying to really advocate for this real aging. And I think that's a fantastic. And we need more leaders in the space like that, because we are so youth obsessed, and social media perpetuates that so much, that, you know, getting old is a bad thing. Particularly for women, you know, like, you know, my partner's a relationship coach, psychologist kind of thing, right? And it's this conversation where men become the salt and pepper, mysterious, successful, wise, and women's kind of, you know, fall apart And, you know, it's the opposite idea that society has of what's going on there.
Totally.
But the other thing that I wanted to add to what you said in regards to we're living longer is that once upon a time, maybe this hormonal sort of shift that was really uncomfortable and painful still happened. But I think historically, the men were out hunting and working, and the women, as they got older, they spent a lot of time sitting down in groups, creating and connecting.
Yeah.
And so we're in this modern day world where, you know, women have got jobs and you literally need both incomes till the day you die to be able to actually pay the mortgage and that kind of
totally.
Thing. So we've also got women now who are working super hard to the, you know, till the day they die. So the idea that we need maybe artificial help, and I know HRT, you know, we've got a couple of episodes on HRT as well, but, you know, that can really help, I guess, exist in this modern version, because I think,
for sure,
and I'm guilty of this too, as natural health practitioners, romanticizing the past a little bit and
yes.
being like, you know, what was natural 10,000 years ago is the answer.
Yes.
And I actually believe that for a lot of things, but not everything, right? And the fact that we're in this modern world with all of these screens and all of this go, 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 and this cortisol and stress addiction that is sort of forced upon us by the world we've got to keep up with, that
right.
we do need some different tools to be able, you know, for women that are menopausal, that are still working like slaves, you know, like that are still
yeah.
trying to provide for everybody, that are trying to be everything to everyone. And I guess that leads me to a question which is sort of just popping up in my mind. Maybe the point of going through like a horrific or a painful menopause journey is for women to finally put themselves first. It's
totally.
Like the breakdown of all meltdowns kind of thing
yes.
has finally happened. And now it's like, you've been ignoring these messages for a very long time. Now you have to. Now you have to prioritize yourself. I don't know. What do you think of that idea?
Yeah, absolutely. No, absolutely. I think that, I mean, as we know, like it's a time where, especially if you have children, they're typically moving on, going to college or university, and you become like the empty nester, right? And mm-hmm. it is this opportunity in your life to really start making yourself a priority. I also think that when we think about fertility, of course, having babies, but we are in a time in our lives now during, you know, perimenopause and menopause where we can still birth so much, and we can birth so much creativity. And we can go and create, and we can be in community. And there's just, I'm certain that there is so much creativity and power and just, you know, unleashing that can happen. And this is a really beautiful time to start tuning into that and asking yourself, like, what do you want to create now that you have this time and this space? And now that, you know, pardon my language, but you're probably at a stage in your life where you give less fucks. Like, what do you want to do? Right? What do you want to do? How do you want
totally.
To show up now? Yeah. So I think that it's a really beautiful opportunity to start tuning in and asking yourself these things, these questions, and giving yourself the grace and the space to pursue them.
Well, going back to the evolutionary question, or conversation point, I'm curious, what are your thoughts? Why are we one of four species to actually have menopause and have like one of the genders live long into years of no fertility and still be here when all of the other species, basically the men and the women, die once their fertile years are over? What are your thoughts?
Well, it's so interesting you're actually asking me this question, because there's this really amazing, I don't know if you're familiar with Kim Anami. She's like a sexual goddess. And she has this like amazing online programs for really supporting women, like in really optimizing their sexual health and owning their sexual health and their femininity and, you know, orgasms and all the things. And she dives into all of this. And she, you know, often talks about how all the women in her community, they're not going through perimenopause. They're not going through menopause. They are like so sexually liberated that like they are not even experiencing these symptoms of menopause. And, you know, there is a part of me that truly does believe that there's some truth to that, like 100%, like 100%. I think that when it comes to supporting all these symptoms that we know to be perimenopause, losing our period, gaining the weight, the brain fog, you know, all of it. I think that nutrition, supplements, HRT can only take us so far. And there's all these other aspects like owning our femininity and stepping into that feminine power and that sexual power and like owning our sexual health and the orgasms and all. And outside of that, our relationships, our community, our connection to spirit, our connection to just Mother Nature, like all of this plays a role. It's a massive puzzle piece. And I think that for so many of us, we're not going to get all the puzzle pieces together. And maybe it's because we're not interested to dive into certain aspects. We don't care about certain aspects. Maybe we just don't believe that's the thing. But I really think that if we actually had all of it, all these puzzle pieces together, then maybe it wouldn't exist. Maybe we wouldn't be experiencing these symptoms. But we also do live in a really crazy world of, like you said, you know, women are working until the day that they die, and we are under artificial light all day, and we're, you know, on social media, and we have phones that are like attached to our hip, and we're on the computers, and you know, there's a lot that we're disconnected from. And so it's no wonder we also experience these symptoms.
Yeah, I love that perspective, because fundamentally it sounds like what that idea is sort of encompassing is that menopause or perimenopause, and this is not excusing all of the other things we've said, but is fundamentally a painful expression of what's been oppressed in your life.
Totally.
Like, which is, oh, that's fantastic. I love that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that could send us down a whole rabbit hole of conspiracy stuff and governments totally. Keeping us quiet and women not expressing themselves. And, yeah, but I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
So since that feels like a bit of a mic drop moment, where can everybody get more of Sam on the internet? Where are we sending people?
I love hanging out on social media, Instagram, of course. I do like that platform because I love food and I love recipes. And that is where I love to visually see people sharing their food. And so that's why I love hanging out there. But that's where I hang out. I love connecting with my community there. You can find me at I am Samantha Gladish on Instagram. And you can also head on to my website, holisticwellness.ca, where all the things are.
Yeah, fantastic. I'll put those down in the show notes and the caption down below so everybody scroll down, click the links and get more of you, which is always a good thing in my opinion. And I guess for us to round out this cool conversation that we've just had, what is one piece of health information you wish more people knew about?
I love and hate this question all at the same time. I don't know if this is really like a health thing per se, but it's more of like a mindset shift. And that is really what I wish more people would recognize is that things take time. Mm-hmm. And we often have this expectation around the timeline and when things are going to be better, or when I'm quote unquote going to be healed, or when the symptom is going to go away, or when I'm going to lose this weight, or whatever it might be. And when that doesn't happen immediately, we give up and then we go and we jump to the next thing and then the next thing. And you just got to give things time and you got to stop giving up. So try sticking to something for an entire year and then see what happens. But really things need time. And I think it's important that we shift our mindset around the expectations around timeline.
I completely agree. And I think that's a fantastic piece of advice. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you.
I appreciate you being here. We'll catch up soon. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
No worries.
Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you enjoyed this episode or learnt anything at all, the gift of your 5-star rating would be incredibly helpful. And what's even more powerful is if you write a review. You can do it below each episode on Spotify, every time an episode comes out, and inside Apple Podcast, simply find the main page of this show with all the episodes on it, scroll to the bottom, hit write a review, share your amazing feedback, and then hit send. It helps this show grow tremendously and allows me to successfully invite bigger and more famous guests each time we do the show. Thank you, thank you, thank you for helping us climb the charts, climb the algorithm, and help more people. Oh, and by the way, I have a short disclaimer as well.
I just wanted to quickly remind you that the information provided on this podcast is for general informational purposes only. While we strive to bring you accurate and up-to-date content, it's important to note that a lot of this is mixed with opinions, stories, and ideas not supported by mainstream science or medicine. Any advice or suggestions should not be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always consult a healthcare provider before making any decisions about the health and wellness of you and your family. Remember too that what works for one person may not work for another. And just as we promote on the show, each person is responsible for their own health decisions. Thank you for tuning into the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. And now, the next episode. Here it is.